Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
It is Wednesday, and that means we've got the privilege of speaking to Dr. Carl. Dr. Carl, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Dr. Howard, lovely to speak with you again.
It is nice to speak to you. So we were talking a little bit earlier about South African words, words that have real meaning in South Africa, but probably nowhere else in the world. Things like, I'll do it just now, which means you're never going to do it. It just means never. When we greet each other, we say, how's it? How's it? We, you know, there's just, we don't go for it. We don't have a barbecue. We have a braai. Give us some Australian words.
Hang on. Are you telling me that just now, I'll do it just now, means the exact opposite?
Yes.
Of what you're...
Yes. It actually means, Dr. Carl, that you're never going to do it. If your kid comes to you and says, will you please take me somewhere, whatever, and you'll say, I'll do it just now. Or if your wife says, can you do this, take out the rubbish, you'll say, I'll do it just now. It means you're never, never doing it. She might as well do it herself. Otherwise, she's going to live in a pigsty.
Right. So we do have some odd words like the word bludge, bludge.
Bludge.
Which means to borrow, to cadge, to take with no thought ever of returning it.
Bludge. Oh, that's so cool.
Bludge.
We need one of those words.
Can I bludge a glass of milk off you? Can I bludge a cup of tea? You might give it back, you might not.
I love
that. We also have a strange tendency in Australia to answer the negative of what is asked. So, how are you going? Not good. What's happening today? Not much. How far is it? Not far. What's there? Not much. What are you going to do with it? Nothing much. So we tend to answer in the negative sometimes as part of our laconic way of speaking.
It's incredible, and I absolutely love it. Australians definitely have a very, very distinct style of speaking. Does it differ greatly throughout the country?
Not enormously. There is, unlike in the USA, where there's a great difference in accents from here to there, and also in the United Kingdom. But in Australia, we tend to have a fairly universal sort of accent. There is a bit of a difference once you go a few thousand kilometres to the east, to New Zealand, and there they tend to shorten their vowels. But across Australia, no big difference.
Absolutely fascinating. All right, let's talk about other interesting things. Lie detector tests, do they work?
The straight answer is that they do not. So if you go back to the early 1920s in the USA, the number of police officers in the whole of the USA with the higher degree education of a doctorate was one. And that was Larson. John Larson, and he had a PhD in physiology, which is looking at how the body works. And he realized that if you were going to tell a lie and you felt guilty about it, doesn't work if you don't feel guilty, but if you feel guilty about telling a lie, did you steal the milk from the fridge? No! But then your heart rate will increase. You'll breathe faster and your skin will begin to micro sweat. And these can be picked up by a little electrical box. And so they invented such a thing in the early 1920s. But he realized that it wasn't really that good. Firstly, if you're a liar, you've got a vested... sorry, a bit of a cough here.
No stress. As long as you're
got a vested interest in telling lies. So you'll be confident. Whereas if you're an honest person, did you steal the milk from the fridge? Part of you is thinking, what a selfish thing to do. I didn't do it, but gee, that's selfish. And you begin to have your heart rate go up, breathe faster, and have increased conductivity of the skin. So straight away, it will catch some innocent people. And by the 1940s or 50s, by the way, this is a non-COVID cough. It's a upper respiratory tract cough, which I've tested with a bunch of rapid antigen tests or lateral flow, whatever they call it. So by the time Larson died in 1965, the United States government said via a U.S. House Committee on Government Operations that the world had been hoodwinked by the myth that a metal box in the hand of an investigator can detect truth or falsehood. So but basically, all of the scientists admitted that it didn't work by 1965, but it is still used in many parts of the world, partially to trick naive criminals who think that it actually works. And so they'll automatically say, okay, I did it. I can't lie to the lie detector. But it is easy to trigger, because what they do at the beginning is ask you a few setup questions. Is your name Karl Krushelnitsky? Yes. Are you incredibly handsome? No. And you give these true answers, and they set up a baseline. And what you can do is fake the baseline by having a little stone in your shoe. And every now and then, half the time, you just press on the stone in your shoe, and it sends the bolts of pain through your body. And from the outside, you look perfectly fine. Or you can bite your tongue, and you can trick it, or you can take some Valium. So even though it has long been proven over half a century ago that it doesn't work, nevertheless, some police jurisdictions still use it.
What's interesting is, from a body language perspective, you don't need that, but you do need those control questions, because we need to establish, if you're trying to detect if somebody is lying, what percentage of eye contact they make. In other words, I might hold eye contact for 30%, somebody else for 60%. But when I'm, those are the types of things. So when you ask me questions that you know I'm not lying about, you establish my baseline. You know, that I look at you for 30%. This is how I look when I'm telling the truth. Well, now, when I start lying, there might be a shift in my own behavior. And that's probably a lot more accurate than a so-called lie detector test.
True. And the number of people, there are some people who are very good at picking up lies. They don't know what they're looking at. Whether it's a tiny shift in the eye muscles on one side, but nevertheless, there are some people who are extremely good at it, but they are truly very few.
Very, very interesting. A male toad will cling to the back of a female for months.
Up to 5 months. My gosh.
That's commitment.
It's the weirdest thing.
Wow.
So it's not here in Australia or, for that case, in Africa, but in a different continent in South America, specifically in Colombia. And there's a toad called a Santa Maria Harlequin toad. It's quite small, only 4 centimeters long, which is maybe the length of a small thumb. And it will cling to the back of a female for up to 5 months without feeding, and will lose up to 30% of its body weight, or sometimes starve to death, and will wait 5 months until the female is saying, okay, you've proved that you love me.
Gosh.
Let's make a baby.
And then what?
Behavior has name.
Wow. She sounds Jewish.
Called Amplex. A-M-P-L-E-X-U-S. Mm-hmm. And they can grab on really hard with a force up to 50 times the male's total body weight. And if another male comes along, they tend to fight them off by kicking them. Why are they doing this really bizarre, potentially fatal, intense and protracted courting practice? Mm-hmm. And the answer is that the males outnumber the females 3 to 1. Females are very rare. So the male, once he sees one, will jump on her back and just stay there and wait until she decides.
That she's
and
ready
you
for
end
him.
Up with, unfortunately, some of them dying.
Wow. Talk about proving your love for me. That is quite something. We've got a few words from listeners. Australians talk about sunnies. What are sunnies?
Sunnies, we have a habit of getting a long word, removing everything except the first syllable, and then putting a vowel on the end. So sunglasses gets turned into sunnies. An ambulance officer is an ambo. A firefighting officer is a fiery. An electrician is a sparky, because they make
it
sparks.
So funny.
And a carpenter is called a chippy, because they make chips of wood as they go through their work.
I love it. You know, if it wasn't for communication, being able to communicate around the world, in no time at all, Australians would be speaking, or we all would be speaking, a completely different language to each other.
Yes, the rapid communications have done this, and a good example of that is the cultural imperialism. So if you think about English-speaking countries, mm-hmm. overwhelmingly the two major countries involved in terms of wealth and power are the USA and the UK, but with straight wealth and power, it's the USA. And they've got the biggest market. And so singers will practically all the time subconsciously sing with an American accent, and yet when they speak, will have their local accent. And this is just simply to be able to be understood. My daughter is in New York, and to be able to understood, if she's renting that automobile with four wheels called a C-A-R, mm-hmm. she can't talk about a car, because they say, what's a car? She's got to say, a car. Because amazing. American English is what they call a rhotic, R-H-O-T-I-C, dialect, which means they emphasize the letter R. And simply to be understood, she has to lean on the R.
We were in New York at a restaurant with some friends, and my wife asked if they could please bring a jug of water. And the waitress looked at her and had no idea. The friend sitting with her said, pitcher water.
And then understood the word pitcher water,
and then it was okay. Yes. A jug of water was not something that they understood at all.
That's right, because jug is not a word they normally use, and they don't understand the word heaps. So in Australia, did you go swimming on your holidays a lot? I went swimming heaps, which means a lot. But right. then the word water, they've changed it from 5 letters to 6 letters, so they kind of pronounce it as W-A-R.
Yeah,
D for Delta, yeah. Water, rather than water.
Absolutely fascinating, Dr. Carl. We do need to leave it there. It is 7:30. Thank you, as always. We'll catch you next week.